This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Boldsworth. FUBAR Radio.
Fucking headphones blasting my ears out. Howdy, welcome to the show. It's the 8th of July. It's not, it's the 1st of July I'm saying this. But it's the 8th of July in your world. Coming up on the show today at 4:30, we have the gorgeous man Andy Smart is in the studio. Comedian, improviser, raconteur Andy Smart. He'll be talking about his new book, A Hitch in Time. Say new book, I think it's his only book.
Debut book.
Yeah, it's about 80. Then at 5pm, Aldo Kane will be in the studio, a TV adventurer, talking about his BBC Two Horizon documentary, Britain's Next Air Disaster.
Can I say?
Question mark, drones.
He parachuted into a volcano once.
Aldo Kane did.
Yeah.
I wonder what adventures he'll get up to today, when we do a bit of scaremongering about drones. Sorry, go on, Nat. What?
He abseiled into a volcano. He didn't parachute. No, I'm wrong.
Can we call him and get rid of the booking, please? Tell me what you just said off air.
He has been charged up by a black rhino as well.
Has he?
He's done it all.
Haven't we all, Nat? At 5:30, Brody Snook is in the studio talking about her new Edinburgh show. Oh, really? Edinburgh shows?
It's Australian.
No offence to Brody.
It's Australian.
But Edinburgh shows, really?
Well, just call it a show. Take off that word,
call
Edinburgh.
Call Handful. It's at the Wee Room, 31st July, 26th of August. Same as all the Edinburgh shows. Can we cut and paste it from somewhere else?
Ian Boldsworth on FUBAR Radio.
That's put me in a bad mood. And you were in a bad mood already.
But that's put me in a better mood, really.
What, because I'm in a better mood?
Yeah, no, it's all good.
What, thinking about being charged up by a black rhino? Has that put you in a better mood?
Maybe. What's your question? Okay, so I abseiled into a volcano. My thing is, why?
Well, why? Well, yeah.
Because I wouldn't. An active volcano as well.
Yeah, but all of them, they always answer because it's there, don't they? They always say that.
Well,
it's like, why did you climb a mountain? Because it's there.
He was a former Royal Marines. Oh, my God, a sniper. Commando.
He sounds
sniper.
Dangerous.
Well, he's up for a mission.
Is he? That was brilliant improv now.
Yeah. I'm just reading the things he's done.
Is he up for a mission now? Oh, brilliant. Okay.
He's escaped Ebola, for God's sake.
He's escaped.
Ebola.
Ebola.
Yeah.
I thought you were boasting about his cricket achievements.
Well, he escaped it.
Ebola. Yeah.
Ebola.
What else has he done?
He's been held at gunpoint. He's rowed across the Atlantic.
Same.
And he dived on Captain Kidd's pirate ship.
He what?
He dived on Captain Kidd's pirate ship.
What does that mean?
I don't know. What a good question for him. What does that mean?
If you're listening to this now and you ever think, I'd quite like to be a guest on FUBAR Radio, literally just make up CV, well, send it over, and just
it's, have a BBC Two show as well.
They've got to be things that just sound impressive,
look.
Right? They don't have to make any sense. So it's something like escaped Ebola. I've escaped Ebola.
You've escaped Ebola.
No, neither of us have had it. We both escaped it.
This guy
make it sound like it was chasing him round.
That's what I think.
In a volcano.
Well, I don't know. In an active volcano, not even a dormant one. Did I say he's been held at gunpoint?
Maybe he had. Well, it sounds more like he had Ebola and survived.
Oh, okay. So he survived Ebola.
Yeah, that would be more. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
It's exciting, this, isn't it? I feel bad for Andy Smart that he's got to come in and essentially be filler.
Right, just
before we have the real life Indiana Jones in here.
Right, and he's done a show with Will Smith.
Has he? Which Will Smith, though?
Well, I imagine it's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
There's another Will Smith who's a performer.
That's true, but
Will Smith.
Would this one have gone into a volcano, the performer Will Smith?
He probably would, actually.
Okay.
Unless he actually smashes through the window, like SAS.
That'd be quite exciting.
For his interview, I think I'm going to be underwhelmed by Aldo Kane.
Look, have you seen a picture of him? He'll probably have you in a neck lock.
A neck lock?
Yeah. look at that.
Let me say,
Jesus,
I could knock you on his arse.
No, you couldn't.
It's a streak of piss, mate.
You want to fight him?
I've got more momentum. I've got shorter legs, so I can get more leverage on that.
Right.
He looks a bit like Alex thingy.
Salmon.
No.
Alex. Oh, is there any other Alexes?
Oh God, I've forgot his
Alex
name.
Alex.
Taskmaster. Alex.
Alex. Oh, Alex Horn.
Alex Horn. Yeah, it looks a bit like Alex Horn. I think so. I think he's got a look of Alex Horn.
Yeah, I can see that actually. Oh, he loves an ab sale, doesn't he?
He does, doesn't he? What would you like to talk about, Nat, today?
What do we talk about? Well, there's some stuff that I want to bring up.
Go on.
But we have to bring it up on the live show, which has already happened, so you've already heard it.
What, on last week's show?
Yeah, on last week's show, so we've already heard it. Like,
well, I'm still in a mood with you from last week's show. You know, last week's show, I made you do loads of forfeits because you forgot my birthday, and I made you do loads of forfeits.
You know what? Actually, if I remember, I wasn't on that show.
You definitely were.
I think I left the building.
You definitely were. You were really upset by the end of it. Do you remember last week?
Yes.
So, I'm still in a bit of a mood about that.
I'm sorry.
But it's falling away.
Okay, good.
I'm not as in a mood
as I
was.
Your hair
looks nice. That won't work. That won't work
at all. Do you want me to straighten your hair?
No, I washed my hair this morning.
Brush it?
I did brush it this morning.
Head massage?
It's been brushed, no. I'm a bit clammy. Oh. In fact, do you know what? I got cooled down in here before, and I now feel really sweaty again.
Oh, okay.
And I tried turning the aircon towards me.
I can hear it.
But I'm roasting that.
What,
so,
do you want to take your top off?
What have you been doing? No, I don't want to take my top off.
Cool down?
Move that camera, I'll take it off.
Yeah.
I've been hot all week. Have you not been hot?
Yes, I have. It was.
How's the heat been in London?
It was particularly hot two Saturdays ago. Yesterday, this Saturday. No, what just hot. It was 35 degrees. It was crazy.
Oh, was it, yeah?
Yes.
What did you get up to?
Well, I went to the South Bank.
Did you? What did you do on the South Bank?
I had a walk.
I find the South Bank a nice idea, yeah. Unbearable in reality.
If you on the main drag, would you call it?
Yeah, I'd call it the
but
drag.
But I know
yeah.
some secret little places.
Same.
Which nobody seems to go to, which is perfect.
The closer you walk down toward the Oxo Tower and places like that, then you'll find little quieter places.
Absolutely. The Waterloo bit is hellish.
But yeah, where the National Theatre is and all that.
Awful.
Horrendous.
But there's also a little bit if you just come off the South Bank, there's a little area.
Thames.
Yeah, if you go into the Thames, you find it's quite empty.
Well, I suppose you can't you? Because I think most people, it would be dangerous to go to the Thames. But you've only got, it's just your feet that are underwater.
I can walk across the
paddling,
river.
Paddling, isn't it?
I can just walk across the river.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
You can kick a boat every now and again.
I can do, yeah. So it's absolutely fine for me.
Go on, tell us about your little, this is a regular feature now that we're going to have every week.
What is it?
At Nat's London Haunts.
I'm not saying
Nat's
where
secret,
it is.
Nat's secret London Haunts.
I don't want people to go there.
No, come on, tell us about South Bank. So South Bank, very, very busy.
Yeah.
London Dungeons over there, of course, and the big wheel thing.
Oh, yeah, packed around there.
The underbelly thing that they have there.
So I had to kill an hour on the slug and lettuce next to the big wheel thing. Awful experience.
It was say that again such quietly.
I had to kill an hour while someone went to
I thought you said I had to kill an owl. Is this place you're talking about like fucking Diagon Alley or something? That's kill an owl, and then I was allowed in the little secret place. But that's what you got to do. You got to literally twist it. It wouldn't work with an owl, would it not?
You can turn his head all the way around.
You can't snap an owl's neck. Did you know that?
How'd you kill it then?
You can't. How'd you kill it? It's not the only way you can kill things in that bait. But it's a rookie mistake that to pick up an owl and go, I want to snap its neck and be like, oh, good luck, mate. Because it's like the top
just
on a bottle, just
round and round.
Yeah, round and round.
It never comes off.
No, never. Never.
I wouldn't hang out. It was a weird thing. It was only the person I was with, they had to go to hospital for 2 hours. And then so I waited and stuck in lettuce.
I wish I'd thought of that excuse when I went out with you.
She was visiting someone in there.
I would say, right. Okay.
And so I waited there, and then, but in the club. In the club, that's what I thought it was a club. It was a pub. At
the Slug and Lettuce.
2 PM.
I think I know where that is, because I think there used to be a gig downstairs from it.
Ah, okay.
I've got a vague memory of PDT. Of him coming to a gig there and me sitting outside chatting to him.
I thought that would be an unusual place to have it, but I'm sure they did.
No, it's in a basement. I'm sure there's an Edinburgh preview that I did in there.
Okay, I can tell you at 2 PM on a Saturday, you think it's 2 AM because they have Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody, playing at a deafening volume.
Right.
I had to do sign language to the barman for what drink I wanted.
Right.
It was just crazy, and I was like, why is this so loud in here?
Would they not have done, like, table service?
No, they don't. They don't do it in there. And everyone's ordering a porn star martini as well.
What's that?
I've no idea. It's some cocktail. But everyone was getting those, and I thought, this is weird.
What's your best cocktail?
Aperol Spritz.
Mine's Sandra De Police.
Right.
That's my best one.
The sound of the police.
Sound of the police.
That's
they
a
do
nice cocktail.
They do that when they serve it.
What's in that cocktail?
No idea. All I know is it's red and blue.
Oh, I see. So it'll be a bit of Campari, I reckon.
I've got no clue now.
Blue Curacao.
No clue.
Interesting.
It was while ago that I had it.
Absinthe blue, isn't it? Or green?
Absinthe green.
Green, okay.
I believe.
So that was strange.
It's good, that bit of drinks chat.
That's the cocktail section.
Right. So is that the end of that?
Well, no, I had a full day out, but I'm not revealing where I went to. That was quiet.
Well, why bring it up then?
Because you asked me what I did.
But it was as if something was going to have happened at the Slug and Lettuce.
It was just...
And what had happened was the music was a bit too loud.
No, it's not an anecdote. It was a very strange atmosphere in there. There was some guy up there who was walking around with an older gentleman with like just his shirt open, just swanning around. And he was flipping over tables for a bit or smashing glasses deliberately. It was very strange.
So it wasn't the Hulk?
Just kept smashing glasses and saying, "All right, babe."
To you or the glass?
I think to everyone. I couldn't tell, and I kept doing. Saying, "I'm going to go and join that fucking table. If that babe don't like it, I don't care." And I was thinking, "Please don't talk. Please don't be talking about me. Please, God."
Now there's a story. And what did so this is one man on his own.
Yeah, but he had a woman with a rucksack with him too.
Right.
I don't know if they were getting out. She was wearing a lot of sequins, and she just kept going, "Leave it, Stu."
So he's called Stu.
We're
getting clues all the time in this story.
Who can tell?
So he was called Stu. He had no top on.
No, long hair.
How old was he?
Oh, he'd be in his, hard to say, 50s, 60s.
Okay.
Maybe?
And he was walking around flipping over tables and smashing glasses.
Well, just less flipping over tables, more trying to flip a table but smashing a lot of glasses.
Right. And what were the staff doing?
They didn't come out the whole time I was there.
So this was outside?
Yeah, it was outside, yeah.
Okay.
It was just very strange. And every time I kept grabbing my glass, he wouldn't just smash my one.
And how was he the next morning when you woke up?
Oh, he seemed fine.
Yep. Nasty girl. Sorry, I've got to turn that off. I'm so sorry. Just had a message through. Robert De Niro's waiting.
I walk in.
what? It's like fucking Heat magazine in this studio at the moment. You wanna hear that? What I'm gonna do next time I put a song on, I'm gonna sneak a mic up.
No.
So you can listen to all the gossip, all the showbiz gossip that she gets up to.
No.
Let's talk about it again. So you were saying that you like Bananarama and we should
live.
Get them on the show.
Yeah, I saw them live a few weeks
ago. I'm pretty sure you said to me a couple of years ago that you'd booked Bananarama or some of them, and then I don't know if they pulled out or whether they just didn't do it or whatever.
I don't think so.
And you were telling me that Siobhan Farhay, is that her name?
Siobhan, yeah, she used to be. She's not in them
she
now.
She left Bananarama originally. I remember this. I remember it from Smash Hits. She left Bananarama originally.
Yeah.
And former Shakespeare sister with Marcella Detroit.
Former guest of the show, Marcella.
Yeah, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, yeah, friend of the show.
We don't call them former guests.
That's true, friend of the show, okay.
Liked her a lot.
Yeah, she
I remember
was really,
really
nice.
Liking her. I think
really
she follows me on Twitter still.
Oh, okay.
I think. So they formed Shakespeare sister, and another girl came into Bananarama.
Jackie,
and I liked her. She was nice.
She was nice.
Who was your best one? Who was your girlfriend out of Bananarama?
In original or any of them?
Any.
I would have gone Siobhan originally, but when she left, Sarah, I think.
Really?
No, but Kieran. I like all of them. They all have the.
It's Karen.
It's not as Kieran, isn't
it's
it?
Call it Karen.
But I saw them live a few weeks ago at Mighty Hoopla Festival.
Oh yeah.
Jackie was not there, Siobhan was not there, it was Sarah and Karen.
Right, well, what happened?
Don't know, there's just two of them now, that's what they
Siobhan
do.
Siobhan is married, was married to Annie Lennox.
Dave Stewart.
And
was
one of them.
Karen used to date Andrew Ridgeley.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, I don't know if she might still do, I've got no idea.
No, because Pepsi and Shirley married him, didn't they?
No, Pepsi married Martin Kemp. Or Shirley.
Shirley married Andrew Ridgeley, probably.
No, that's not. No.
Mel and Kim?
Kim Appleby was going out with Craig Logan. From Bros.
Jesus. So was the other Mel and Kim? Was Kim the one that died?
No, Mel.
Mel died. So Kim's going out with Craig Logan out of Bros.
Was again.
Is she not anymore?
Don't think so. No.
Why?
I have to fact check.
What are you basing all this on?
That they used to date.
He got £1 million. Craig
From
Logan.
Bros.
Yeah.
No mention in that documentary, did he?
No, not a word.
Which I thought that was one of the only things I thought I didn't like about it. I thought it was very good.
Did you?
I really liked it.
I didn't.
Why?
Because I felt. It was too. It knew what it was. I didn't feel like they'd captured them.
I think the director knew what it was. I don't think they did.
I think they did.
Really?
I do. I think they did. I really do.
Okay.
I'd like to think they didn't, but I think they did.
I mean, they didn't get on, did they, at all?
But I think even that seemed like a potential contrivance.
Really?
I wasn't convinced by it at all. And I found it funny until I started doubting that it was real.
Right.
I imagine that's how people feel with the Parapod. I imagine people feel that way about the Parapod.
Yeah.
Where they think Barry's a character.
Mm-hmm.
And once you think it sort of ruins it.
Oh, okay.
A little bit, I think. So once you think he is a character, which he's not, but once you think he is, I think it can potentially ruin the reality of it.
But if you see Barry live or you've heard he's been on this show loads, you're going to know quite quickly. No one can do that character.
But that doesn't matter though, because we won't see Matt and Luke live, will we? All we'll see is what's presented to us via the medium of television and song.
That is very true.
So all I can base it on is that programme, and I wasn't convinced by that programme. I would imagine if they heard me say that and it was genuine what they were doing, they would feel slighted I always feel slighted, and Barry feels slighted when people say he's a character.
I think it was because I think it didn't show particularly.
There's loads of similarities between the Parapod and Bros. Loads.
Right.
But go on, what were you saying?
You do a good cover of When Will I Be Famous. But Matt didn't necessarily come off in
it's
the
very
best
rhetorical,
light.
Our version.
Yeah. Do you not think that Matt Goss in some of the things, the arguments, there were some really kind of excruciating bits, which I can't believe weren't real, because otherwise you'd probably go, don't put that in there.
Well, here's what I think. I think if it was real, then he's really thick. That's what I think.
I do think that.
And I'm not sure you can get to that stage of your life that he's at with the experiences that he's had and have not learnt anything about how you come across and how. Do you know what I mean? To not learn a thing about it. If that was a new band coming out and they were both like 18 or 19 or whatever, then I would take it on face value. I'd go, oh, bless them, they're idiots, right?
Right, yeah.
But I don't know how you can get that far through your career doing so many different things, songwriting, Vegas residences, obviously Bros was huge when Bros were out.
Yeah.
And have all them experiences and still not appear to have learned anything about how you come across.
But they've had a lot of time away, haven't they? They've not been consistent. They haven't done stuff together
for a while.
Think he
was giddy then?
Yeah, of course you would be.
They were on a documentary.
I think so. And thinking like, and they were doing, because they were promoting the gigs, weren't they? So it was the tour and the documentary.
But he's not been without fame. You know, he's huge in Vegas. He was huge in Vegas. He's had a solo albums that have done well with a core fan base. And Luke. No,
and
Luke's been in Blade, hasn't he? As a decent...
He's been in films.
Yeah.
Quite a number of films.
Blade.
He was in one of the Blades.
He's in Hellboy too. Yeah, like, he's done quite a lot of things.
What's his face? Guillermo del Toro really likes him.
Yeah. Well, I would hope he does.
Next, didn't they have Hellboy in it for a minute? Ron Perlman was in the documentary saying that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But then they didn't fall out in a nice way, did they? They didn't break up in a nice way. They just got a phone call. Matt, imagine like he wanted to carry on forever maybe doing Bros, and Luke went, I'm out. And then that's the end of Bros, isn't it?
Right.
What's he going to do? He
hasn't Call it Bro. Could have done that.
He can't just be him.
That would look bad, wouldn't it? Because do you remember when it was three Stickmen originally, their logo?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And then
it
went to two Stickman.
Yeah, it can't just be one man.
And then it's down to one Stickman.
So it's not going to work, awful, is it? It's not going to work. Which is why I should always have at least five people in a band.
And then he should call his album Return of the Saints, because it can just be one Stickman.
Aww.
Just put a little halo above him.
Matt.
I personally wasn't convinced.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I'm right.
No, absolutely.
I just think that's what I took from it. I was kind of looking forward to it, and I was enjoying it for about maybe half an hour, and then I started being suspicious of it.
But I didn't know that was going to be what it was when I started watching it, did you? I thought, I was just going to watch it. I didn't realise it was going to be all those issues coming up.
Well, I did, because I'd heard about it before it, so I hadn't. Okay. I didn't just come to it cold. I'd seen all the fallout from it, I guess, and people laughing about it and all that sort of thing. I mean, you know, there's the other aspect to all that, isn't there, which is when something's just very funny for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
What do you do from the inside with that? Like, how do you... They seem to have acknowledged that it was very funny.
I think maybe... I seem to remember one tweet around the time being a bit kind of... It's a bit, you know, we put a lot of work into this. And I think
I
think once they realised that there was a lot of love for them and thought there was, like, some gold there, I think they then took that on and went, okay,
great.
You
just got to own it as a thing.
Right, and I think they're going back on tour again now, and they were saying, promise we're going to do more this time, we'll get on better this time, actually turn up for some gigs and just do them all.
Was that the press release?
That's what it says, yeah. Not put them on the show.
Was the press release... I promise we are going to do some more gigs. Then we're going to book a load in and then turn up and do them all. Was that right? Were you a big fan of Bros?
No, actually, I wasn't. No. I quite liked I Owe You Nothing. That was my favourite. Drop the Boy, that was a big tune. But I didn't love them.
The Boy Is Dropped was better.
What?
The Boy Is Dropped.
Who's that by?
Bros.
Really?
Yeah, it was B-side.
Oh, I didn't know. Is that true? You winded me up?
No, genuinely true. I know a lot about Bros.
I was more into New Kids on the Block.
Didn't care for them. The Boy Is Dropped.
I sing that.
It's pretty much the same, kind of the same lyrics as Drop the Boy. I think, I'm pretty sure there were subtle alterations within it.
Well, I'm a man, yes I am.
But it was slow with a piano.
Ooh, okay.
Really brilliant.
Okay.
Like better than Drop the Boy.
Yeah.
It was a nice, I quite liked when Bros did stuff like that, when they did Silent Night and all that sort of thing.
Cat Among the Pigeons, that was a ballad.
I would have liked it back then, but now I can hear quite how painful it is to listen to. Same as the Silent Night version that, you know, when I was in my early teens, Silent Night, their version of that was really quite beautiful. But when I hear it now, it's like, Jesus, what? Like that, he does a really long note at the end of it. It's about 30 seconds long.
Really?
Yeah. Should we just play Bros today?
Nah, let's do that stuff. Okay.
Let's do that.
I don't reckon there's any on there.
Can you... well, then that's why we have people.
We do have people.
Can we, in the first instance, try and find The Boy Is Dropped?
By Bros.
So it's not Drop the Boy, it's The Boy Is Dropped. Because I still feel like Nat doesn't believe me that this is a song.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
I reckon what you might end up having to do is rip it from YouTube, is what it would be my guess.
The Famous Is When?
No, there's nothing like that.
Oh, okay.
It's literally just The Boy Is Dropped. I'm not winding you up. The Boy Is Dropped was genuinely. I found I Owe You Nothing, but it's not by them.
Who's it by?
Sinabo Say.
Oh, that won't be a cover of Bros.
Well, let's pretend.
Let's have a look. Let's see
pretend
it is.
It
won't be, but yeah, okay.
All right, I'll play that. We'll bring Annie Smart in.
Okay.
But this is our message to Bros. Like, don't feel that you have to book in loads of gigs and come back and turn up for them all. You don't owe us anything.
Some of them, not all
don't
of them.
Don't owe us anything, Bros. What do you reckon?
This is not a Bros cover.
What do you reckon?
I like it. I like Sinabo.
You like it? Has it been one note?
It's good.
Is it all going to be like this? Because if it is, I don't want to listen to it.
We'll see. It's going to kick in. Here we go.
Nothing at all.
What are the other words?
Nothing.
Ooh, oh.
Ooh.
I'm nothing.
nothing at all.
I'm a man, yes I am. No, that's Drop the Boy, that's the wrong song. It's all right,
look,
eh?
Look, this, is, right? It, is this a lady or a man? You don't know. Whichever
that's
it is.
That's a man, now. Right,
let them sing. I don't have to move for you. I don't have to dance, monkey dance, monkey dance, monkey dance for you. See, I won't help you understand. No helping hand, no. See, these aren't tears, this is the ocean. These aren't fears, this is devotion. I owe you nothing, nothing. I be myself and I ain't fronting. And no, no, no. I owe you nothing, nothing. I be myself and I ain't fronting. And no, no, no. I don't have to walk for you. I don't have to talk to you. Display never was, never will ever be for you. I won't help you understand. I don't need no helping hand. No, see, these aren't tears. This is the ocean. These aren't tears. This is devotion. Why you always have to try me? You're thinking I'm gonna follow blindly. Why you always have to try? Finish quick that. I spotted it because it was flashing.
Oh,
the thing was flashing because the song wasn't as long as the brass version. We're joined now in the studio. Are you on two? Is it two?
Two,
that one?
Yeah.
We're joined now by Andy Smart.
Hello.
Fresh from the Glastonbury thing.
2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Fresh from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, but what a great weekend that was.
No, I reckon it's took you this long to get back because you hitchhiked.
I did.
So right,
I did in the old days.
That was clever, wasn't it?
It was very clever.
That's an amazing link.
Great link.
Because I'm quite happy to sit and just like talk shit with you as usual.
Yeah.
But I know you are on promotional duties as well.
Yes, this is the first promotional one I've actually, because it's not out till the 27th of July, but yeah.
Right, which is in.
It says 25th.
2 weeks.
25th, I think it is.
Yeah, but that's the PR company.
Oh, wrong. Like, thing wrong.
But then people will go down Waterstones and that and be like, Andy Smart, and they'll be like, I don't know what you're on about. I've got Andy McNab. Good night's come out today. I heard it on Foobar Radio. And they'll go, on what?
Because today is the 8th, isn't it? It's not out until the 25th or 27th. We're not sure.
Definitely the 27th.
Wait, 27th, okay.
And the audiobook at the same time.
Have you done the audiobook yourself?
I have. It took me 11 hours.
Was it horrible?
No, I really enjoyed it.
Did you? Okay.
I kept wanting to change bits. And I was going on.
Do you know what I heard recently? Well, I think I mentioned it on here. I bought it recently. Is Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse's Gone Fishing? They've done a book of that, and the audio book to that. It's like genuinely brilliant.
Yeah,
it's because you kind of can't record what they've written.
Right.
Because it would sound like a script then.
Yeah.
So they just fuck it off in the audiobook. Like, they still go back to little bits and bobs.
Yeah.
But they're constantly just having just normal conversations. It's, like, really long.
Yeah. Well, that's what I kept saying to the... Because I said, look, to the sound guy who's recording it.
Yeah.
I said, look, I've written this. Surely I'm allowed to change it if I want.
So were they just saying you couldn't?
It was going, no, because people buy it and they follow along with their finger.
Fuck off. People do that?
Apparently so. He said, so it's got to be exactly the same. So the one thing I changed was in the acknowledgements. There was this guy, John Woodall, who I was in a double act with at Covent Garden, and he always, and like, he used to wear white jeans at Covent Garden, the dirtiest place on the planet when you're working on the street. And And they were always immaculate. So when it got to his acknowledgement, I went, John Woodall for looking so fucking cool all the time.
Right, nice, nice. Oh, acknowledgements, that's a good point. Let's have a look at the acknowledgements, see if I'm in there.
Yeah.
Just make sure.
Yeah, this one only goes up to 83. You'll be in the next one.
Do you know what? I've had exactly the same fucking excuse from Lee Mack and Johnny Vegas. Exactly. It's like they fucking pass it round.
You didn't know him in 83, did you?
But that's not, that doesn't mean that. But you don't.
Yeah, you weren't even born.
You don't just thank people up to a point.
Because that's chapter 2, isn't it? The next book.
The next book.
It'll be
hopefully
a chapter about you, I imagine.
Your daughter's Grace, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, yeah.
How old is she?
She's 26 now.
All right. So what year was she born?
1993.
Oh, it's just your bit of thanked Grace here. Yeah, this ending is empty.
She's my daughter.
Well, that's not what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm saying. Some things transcend the fucking limitations of the time period.
I can see your point now.
Yeah, exactly. Right, has this gone to press or is this the promo copy?
It's too late. It's gone to press.
Fucking.
Can you re-record the audiobook with a little special?
I'm now siding with the bloke in the recording studio who I was going to take the piss out of, and now I'm like, no, he's got a good point.
Yeah, it's got a good point.
Livid about this. Yeah. Who else have you thanked?
Samuel Beckett. Well, I was
Tommy Cooper.
No. I think Mike Harding's in there, isn't he?
Okay. Have you met?
Mike Harding was one of the people that gave me a lift. Yeah, strangely.
Mike Harding.
Yeah, the Rochdale cowboy.
Yeah, yeah. as an accident, he just happened.
No, we were doing a runner from from a Little Chef. And I put my thumb out and he stopped and he went, have you guys been doing a bank robbery or something? And we went, no, we're doing a runner from that Little Chef. And he went, get in, and we drove off.
Now, isn't that, well, you could break that down so much and go, I can totally understand why Mike Harding would go, what are they running from? There's a fucking gig in this. There's absolutely a story in this. What's happened? We're running from a Little Chef and he'd be like, fucking bingo, jackpot.
The thing was, we'd actually left money on the table. Because what happened was we went in, we had 84p between us, and we went in and we wanted, so we hadn't eaten all day, and there was a full breakfast,
right?
And it worked out it was going to come to 86p, and so we said, well, we'll just have the full breakfast without the beans, because we saw that baked beans were 7p.
Okay.
And then that would be fine,
right?
But the bloke went, no, that's the price for the breakfast whether you have the beans or not. So Dean, the bloke I was with, went, well, I want my beans then. So the bloke gave us two saucers of baked beans. We went back to the table, we ate the beans, and we left our 84p on the table and then ran like mad.
Did you not take a lolly there?
We didn't want to go back near the counter.
You could have took a lolly, mate. You could have just gone and just grabbed loads of lollies.
What year was it?
Because 85p for a breakfast, I'd go to Little Chef.
Oh, it's from the older days, Andy.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember pounds, shillings and pence, young lady.
That's you can remember when you used to fold a pound.
I wonder how much it costs a breakfast
I've still got the first halfpenny, penny and 2p piece that I ever got given in change on February the 22nd, 1971.
That's like Rain Man. What's that? What, genuinely?
Yes.
For why? Why did you get... What was the emotional
attachment? Because I thought, this is fantastic. This is new money. We had...
I'm keeping it
as a reminder of this day, and I still remember the
day. That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Are you soft like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I keep
ridiculous amounts of things that I should have thrown away years ago. But
what sort of thing?
Well, like every wristband from Glastonbury.
Okay,
or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because I've done every one since 85, so I've got quite a few.
I've got a box in my, where is it? It's in my office now, like a big wooden box. Which has got like keepsakes from everything, from when I had cognitive thought, I guess. And a lot of them are related to girls, you know, a lot of them are like sort of ex-girlfriends and stuff and things. And I find now, I looked at it quite recently because I was looking for something else. And I was looking for my gum shield. I had my rugby gum shield still in there. I was looking for that. Because I wanted to see if it fit in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've had loads of teeth work done recently. And I thought, I wonder how much my teeth have changed. And then I thought, I can check that because I've got a gum shield from when I played rugby in my teens. And see if it fits or not.
Yeah.
And it kind of did, kind of. But I saw lots of things and I thought, I must sort this box out because I didn't have a clue what a lot of the things in there were. I had like a raffle ticket.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what the relevance of that was,
well,
but it must have had relevance
sometimes.
So are you on it like that?
Yeah, yeah. And I've got, like in the book, there's I've got a load of... tickets that I earned at American Scout Camp.
Right.
For, like, you know, my sewing award and stuff like that.
Some people would presume you'd underachieved in your career, but...
Oh, one of them was we had to. It was called the Survival Award, and you had to go out in the woods.
Just had to live. And yeah,
basically, you had to go out in the woods for 24 hours with no food.
Wouldn't it be great to give out the Survival Awards and go, if you're at the ceremony, you get it.
But they taught us how to catch all these animals and stuff, and we built all these traps, didn't catch a thing. We just lived on sarsaparilla tea for those 24 hours. So
where's that come from? Because I think you're of a generation of folk, many of whom have found themselves within the comedy industry, in the loosest sense of the word.
Yes.
No, but you know what I mean, though? There is that gang. We spoke about this last time you were in. There is that gang of brave warriors. I have a real... Even though I've never been a part of that, I know most of you in some way, and I always kind of envy it.
We were just lucky to be there at the start.
But you're literally... No, but it's different. I think you're different. I think you're different, and Frosty, people like that, are different to Alexi Sale or Mail or, you know, any of that crowd.
Yeah, yeah. No, we were never in it for the fame or anything. We were just in it to have a good time all the time.
But I'm amazed that so like, are you not surprised that so many of you have lived?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was six.
Some have gone. Like, some of, you know, we've lost some along the way.
We lost a couple.
Not as many as you would have thought.
Look, I've got my free oyster card.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's not many people have a free oyster card with a fucking publicity shot on it.
Oh, it took 3 days. It took 3 days for them to say that was an okay picture. Yeah. Because everyone else has got their passport photos, but I just went, no, I'm going to have one of my publicity shots.
I'm not trying to get abroad. Trying to get on the Northern Line.
That's valid until 2025. So they've got hope.
Yeah.
They've got hope.
Well, then you get the big one. Then you get the everywhere pass. You can go anywhere on
the freedom pass.
The freedom pass. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
But how?
So I don't know. I don't know how we got to 60, especially Frosty. I've got no idea.
He's like an ox, isn't he, Frosty?
He just keeps going and going. But we were always just in it for the fun and the laughs.
Yeah,
that was always what we did, and I think that's why we still get invited back to a lot of festivals.
But you're all deliver as well, so that's the difference in it. Is it's like and again, we can name names and I won't name names, but there are certain people who are out of control, if you like, within their lives, who couldn't do the gig. Now, do you know what I mean? Who wouldn't be able to get away with it on the stage because they're,
I think
whatever they are. But
I think our craziness sort of keeps us young. That's the thing. So we don't see ourselves at 60.
No, of course not.
But we see ourselves as the same age as when we started. So
it's pathetic, really, isn't it?
Says Ian. He's 22 on air. Quite a lot. 24. It's 24 now. Not
stupid. Not 22.
It is. It's absolutely ridiculous. If you'd have told me at Covent Garden in sort of like 82 that I would still be, you know, earning money, and travelling the world, you know, doing comedy, I'd have just laughed in your face because I was juggling pig's kidneys at the time.
Because you're on smack.
No.
Because I was getting arrested at the time.
There's a lot of that in the book, yeah.
Well, I was surprised. I shouldn't have been, but I was. So when I saw on Twitter that you'd written a book, and then I thought it was a joke for a bit. I thought it was just you messing about.
Well, I thought it was a joke when... Because
it was published by the AA. What threw me.
Well, this is the thing. I got a phone call one morning and this bloke went, we'd like to publish a book of your stories. I heard you on TalkSport doing a story about hitchhiking, and we're keen to, and I said, who is this? And he went, we're the AA publishing. And I went, all right, it's Frosty having a laugh.
Yeah.
So so he said, let's meet up and we'll talk about it. So he said, I said, well, where should we meet? And he said, well, you name a restaurant. So I chose a really...
You never rode.
I chose a really...
I can have someone there in half an hour.
B13.
Go there, turn your phone on, we'll ping you and we'll just come and meet you.
So I get to the restaurant.
Oh, little chef, you black cock. I'm not allowed.
dogs that don't have beans.
I'm barred from Little Chefs.
They're not. You think when they read this that Little Chef are going to get in touch with me in hospital?
I think there's a statute of limitations. When was it?
I think it's good publicity for them now, because they want a bit of a downward turn. So I think you bring
them. Oh, I don't think they are.
Didn't one of them
Little
go
Little Chef?
Best fried lunch, didn't they?
Wasn't that the one Heston or one of the chefs?
Yeah.
I like a Little Chef.
No, I think Little Chefs are fine.
Do you think they're okay?
I think what they did, I think they managed to withstand the financial loss from that particular day. That 4p that they didn't get.
It was close, though. It was quite close.
They brought in Heston to repair the finances. So, do you remember what the bloke was called from the AA?
Phil Carroll. He's great, and he looked like an actor playing.
Right, yeah.
And I thought, well, Frosty's really got the town here. So I sat down and I chose a really nice restaurant, and I ordered all the most expensive things on the menu, and a really nice 50-quid bottle of rosé. Right. And he's going, and I'm telling him stories and everything, and then at the end of the meal, I said, so. Are you going to pay me for this? And he went, yes. And he told me how much it was worth. And I went, look, I'll get this.
So where did he find you? What, he'd heard you on TalkSport?
He heard me telling stories about... Well, the original story was that when I was about 20, 21, I was in a pub in Liverpool. And I'd just hitched down to London and back in... And both journeys took 4 hours. And I was bragging about how good I was at hitchhiking.
Right.
Because I had lots of little tricks. Well, and these lads,
guns. tasers, a car.
And,
what, I can't let that go. What little tricks?
Well, things like
showing a bit of leg and stuff. No. What were your tricks for hitchhiking? Well,
like I'd always wear a smart jacket. I'd always have it. I'd have the destination I was going to, and I would always write please underneath it. And that probably got me more lifts than anything else, because other people would just write the destination.
Right.
But if you wrote please, people would go, "Oh, he's being polite. What a nice young man. We'll have him in our car."
Right.
He won't have a knife.
The irony was. Okay, so go on.
So we were sat around the bar, and they said, "How far do you reckon you could hitch and get back in 2 days?" And I said, "Oh, you choose a place." And one of them said, "What about top of Ben Nevis?" So I went, "All right." So I had to get from Liverpool. So I said, "When do you want me to do it?" And they went, "Well, what's the time now?" It was like 10 o'clock at night. And they went, "Now." So I just walked, they took all my money off me. I've walked down to the pub. They left me £1 to get food.
More than fucking Little Chef got. Well, you'd have got change from a Little Chef without, wouldn't you?
I spent most of that pound on bus journeys.
Right.
One to get to the East Lancs Road. Then I hitched all the way. I got to like Fort William at about 3 PM. I went into the information office and I said, "Have I got time to get up Ben Nevis today? And how long does it take to get up and back down?" She went, "Oh, most people leave about 9 AM, so it's too late to go up now." And I said, "But hang on, I've got this bear."
Oh, that's fine then.
And it was like late September, so it was already getting dark quite early. So I had to, I sprinted up. It took me 3.5 hours to run up Ben Nevis. And then it was, the top of it was completely covered in cloud. So the lads had got one of those disposable cameras from behind the bar in the pub.
Right.
So I had to find someone to take a picture of me next to the trig point. And like, I'd seen loads of people coming back down as I was going up. But it was like so covered in, and I was sort of shouting, "Hello, hello." And eventually there was this Canadian couple just came out of the fog, and I went, "Could you take my picture by this trig point?" And the picture just looks like me standing against a grey sheet.
Just pointing at some grass.
So I ran all the, and then I ran down in an hour and a half to get down, which was just the most dangerous run I've ever done in my life. It got my heart going. And then I hitched back and I got as far as like the services in the Lake District.
Right.
And
the nice ones.
Yeah, the nice ones, yeah. the little reservoir. And it was like about 6 o'clock in the evening. I was like, I'm never going to make it. So I just walked in and I stood on a chair in the cafeteria and I went, "This is going to sound very strange, but I've had a bet with some mates. Is anyone going to Liverpool?"
Fucking
and this
hell.
Bloke went, "I'm going to Warrington. Is that good enough?" I went, "That's perfect, mate." Got in, and he and I fell asleep at that point because I hadn't slept for like 2 days, and I'd run up a mountain and back down again. And I slept.
I'd have loved you to have woke up at the top of Ben Nevis.
I woke up in Warrington and managed to hitch back from there. And I got back to the pub about 9:15. So I went to the other pub up the road where I knew some mates. And they right. bought. They, I told them the story and they bought me a pint. And then 9:55, I walked into the pub and they were all waiting. I went, right, £2 each.
That's
and
fucking,
I won a tenner.
That's crazy.
So I bought a tenner?
No, but that it was five pints to a pound in those days.
In this book,
a tenner's a lot of money.
Oh, I'm not, don't make excuses. In this book, do you acknowledge your idiocy? Like do you, is there any self-reflection on like what is actually wrong with you?
Yes.
Is the yeah,
well,
yeah.
It ends up with me running with the bulls. So yes,
yeah.
So
I remember
a lot
you
of,
doing that. That first, I think it was the first
I'm
time.
Going,
I heard.
I'll be down there next week for Run 62.
It's constantly running with
running
bulls.
Running with which is funny because the next guest we have in here is a bit of an adventurer, but I bet he's not run up Ben Nevis in an hour and a half. But even
well,
he's not done that.
I do feel very much like you have really stolen Aldo Kane's glory.
I know. Like, I really he's upsailed into
he's
going to
come in
volcano.
Going, oh yeah, done oh, this, 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 and I'm like, yeah, have you ever fucking just hitchhiked to the top of Ben Nevis in 24 hours? Don't think you're up, mate. Upsailed into a volcano. Yeah, yeah, but you've got equipment there, haven't you?
Well, yeah, well, when we did the kids' TV, I actually abseiled out of a helicopter in a force 8 gale to land on Richard Branson's Blue Ribbon boat
right.
across Plymouth Harbour. They're both doing it at 30 knots.
Right.
And I had to free abseil down from and land on like a deck about the size of this table. Nearly knocked Richard Branson into the sea.
What's that? Come on. Well, there's another of your failures. You know what I'm thinking at the moment, no, genuinely, oh, this just occurred to me. I got an email last week from someone at the AA.
Yeah.
Okay. They want to do a book
something
with you.
At the AA. No, it was one of them. It said this message is clipped or something, and it was like I couldn't read the message,
oh, right.
And
yeah.
I thought it was spam.
But now I'm thinking with a publishing deal for you.
Has someone come? Is it like because yeah, I've noticed.
Well, Arthur Smith's got one. They've asked Arthur as well. He's doing one.
And
so
they've just done. And
they've
Red
just
Dwarf
started
doing their adverts.
Yeah, they just started to do publishing now. So.
Maybe I've been approached.
It's really
yeah, well, have you deleted the email?
Yeah, I just deleted it.
Well,
I thought
being
I
deleted
was sure,
it
was sure it was spam. I thought the junk just had missed it. Can you, when you go into the AA next time, can you say, have you tried to been getting in touch with Ian Boswell?
I'm going in next Wednesday, so I've got to sign 50 copies.
Oh, is it? It's a good meeting. I was worried it was going to be an explaining yourself meeting. Someone sat there with a stern face saying apparently they just went ahead and printed it but there are a few few things I'd like to bring up first off there's a letter there for you from the legal team at Little Chef.
Thank you.
I think it's tremendously exciting. Like I genuinely do. And when I did a tweet about it,
yeah.
And I rarely do that for other people.
I know, you're very kind.
Mm. No, but what I said on there, I thought was actually, I wasn't sure how you would take it.
I took it exactly how it was meant.
What did you say?
I said something about something like when Andy Smart dies, everyone will
which
be saying.
Which is never, because he's seen the things you've done. He could have died a million times. That you're never going to.
Yeah,
die.
No, I've already. I have already died. Yeah. I was dead for 3 minutes.
Really?
When I was seven, I drowned in the Basingstoke Canal, and I was dead.
I think you've told me that before.
I was dead for 3 minutes.
Oh, so you're immortal now.
I mean, that explains a lot of the stupidness in the book.
No, the last person I heard boasting like that was Rick Mayall. Giving those sort of boasts. I was dead for a bit and I rose like Jesus. But I meant that. Like, did you got
no,
to
I took
it
like, because I had the 60th birthday party a couple of weeks ago and it was just like, it was a celebration because no one there thought I was going to make 60.
No, but not any of you could drop at any point. Let any of that go.
And it was so nice to have that love in the room, and I was really touched that you know that so many people had come and everyone was just grinning at me. It was and I was thinking, this is what my funeral was going to be like.
I strongly feel now. This is what I think. This quite strongly.
Yeah.
I feel now with the. Advances in medical science and stuff where people can often now say to you, and hopefully they never will, to say to you, you've got a week to live.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pretty accurate. I think in those circumstances, you should hold your funeral.
Yeah.
I think you should have your. You should go, right, well, my funeral's tomorrow then.
Yeah.
So you can be at your own funeral.
What happens when you actually die, though?
Well, you've done it. It's just, it's all admin. You've got all the admin out of the way.
Oh, so you've got all the box and everything just, ready.
So you better have firelighters ready. And then once you're dead, it's like, right, well, we've done all the gumps. Off he goes.
That's nice.
And then if you survive, they wouldn't hate you for it. They'd go, well,
take the firelighters out and use them for something else. They don't have a shelf life on them, do they not?
Yeah.
What I said was that when you die, everyone will say how brilliant you are.
Oh, thank you.
And but you know,
well, that's what I took from it. It'll be one of those people
on the circuit who, like when Malcolm died, where everyone then suddenly, not suddenly, because everyone liked Malcolm anyway in his life, not everyone, but enough people, will say, oh, it was great, and blah, blah, and all these tributes. And it felt like, because you've got the book, A Hitch in Time.
Yeah, the story's there now.
But it also felt like, well, there's your way of putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So rather than seeing if you can get your tweet on, let's be honest, the bottom story on BBC News.
Yeah.
If indeed at all. It'll certainly be like the second one on Chortle, definitely. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, providing Daniel Kitson doesn't announce at all. But I think that's important, you know what I mean? So I think now, because we've seen it happen historically in comedy and we lose people and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there's going to be a few in the next couple of years.
But isn't there, though? Yeah. Like, there really is. Can you imagine, dying the day after Frosty? Like, imagine... imagine if Frosty died and then you died the next day. Heaven forbid. That'd be awful. Fucking clinging to life. I'm not ready.
I need another couple of days.
This won't have the impact it should have. But that's what I think. So I know, I do. We've spoke many times, including on the show as well.
Yeah.
That I'm a great admirer and I'm always very grateful to you as well for the support you've given me, because it came from nowhere and I really did appreciate it, and I love that you've got a book. Like, I genuinely do.
Thank you.
I can't see you getting another. So I'm a bit pissed off about the acknowledgements, because I'll say to you what I said to Johnny and Lee, and both has proved right.
Yeah.
Never mind, it finishes at 1983. Do you genuinely think they're going to get you another book? Do you think you can ever put this right?
Strangely, they are talking about it. The next one was quite an interesting period.
Because it was published by the AA. Of course they're talking about it. Well, make sure you get it done before April next year, because when their accounts come through, they'll be like, fucking, why are we publishing books?
I think they want a few... They want more maps in the next one.
Maybe a section on repairs you can do yourself. I'm chuffed to bits for your man, and it looks great.
Thank you.
And it's out on the 27th of July.
27th of July.
But you could go on the 25th to your local bookstore
and order it. You can order it from Foyles online.
So. Okay, is that where you get the most money from?
Well, no, it's where Amazon don't get the most money from.
Okay, so you're dissuading Amazon.
I don't like people...
Same.
Yeah, you don't pay taxes. It's
not just that. It's not even just that.
It's that gig economy and all that.
It's just murdered the publishing industry, the high street. I don't use Amazon at all.
No.
I used to. I got caught up in it, but I don't use them at all now.
No.
In fact, I cancelled my Amazon Prime, which I got free from here.
Well, they keep offering it to me. I'm going, no.
No. Mm. The baddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, every now and again, there's something. Every now and then, you go, well, actually.
When you want it something the next day. And you live in the country anyway.
I'm building a C-3PO, and that is literally the only place I can get that black rubber. No, I don't use them at all. So, avoid Amazon. Yeah, Foyles, you're happy with?
Online, yeah.
Direct from the AA, can you get it from there?
You must be able to.
I bet you can get it at service stations when you... You know, when you've been in Waitrose and stuff, and you go out of a service station, there's a little bloke there with an umbrella. I bet you can get it there.
Well, strangely, W.H. Smith have made it their travel book of the month for August. So, so that'll be in all the W.H. Smith in every service station, you will be able to get it. Yeah.
Whose cocks he sucked? The this is the bizarrest thing I've ever heard
I
in
know.
My life.
It just, and wow, it keeps getting more and more bizarre.
I like it though, but it gives me hope. That's how I feel
it's
about
like,
it.
It's like Dave Jones being a film star.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, the moments of like, oh fuck. But then it worries me that people then hang their hopes on that. You know what I mean? Yeah. People who are like sort of over the age that you're allowed to be a comedian nowadays. When you're that, you're like, well, Andy Smart has got a book out. Dave Johns was in a film. It's like, I might
still play wicketkeeper for England.
Yeah, you could do.
They've got loads of books. That says on the press release, they've dramatically expanded their publishing activity.
They have, yeah.
From zero to one.
Ten.
They've got ten, have they, really? I don't give a shit about the other ones. All I care is about Andy's one.
Okay.
And my one that I've lost by deleting their email. It's called
really
A Hitch in Time.
Get back in touch.
Yeah.
Would you think they would?
They'll do a second email, wouldn't
I'll
they?
Have a word on Wednesday. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's fine. Channel 4 got in touch with me not that long ago. Genuinely did, and I fucked them off.
Right.
About doing something. I fucked them off because I felt that it was too similar to the Parapod, what they wanted me to go in to do for a pilot.
No. The Parapod's yours, and you've got to be proud of that.
No, I totally am. Yeah, but it wasn't the Parapod they were doing. They were doing a show about conspiracy theories, and they wanted people to challenge people's ideas of conspiracy.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it
was... Like you did with Barry, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't want to cross that barrier with a Parapod, even though Barry just does the Parapod on his Patreon. But he does just with other comedians, but anyway, because it's not the same. It's like, it's an argument about whether ghosts exist. Fucking idiot. But that's fine, leave him to it. Yeah. We learn
but
the hard
way.
But
you knew that when you were going into your own.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
He was always bang on about ghosts, wasn't he? Even before the PowerPoint.
But I did not go to the Channel 4 meeting because I felt that's actually a conflict of interest with what I'm doing with the movie and all that sort of stuff. So it was I turn things down like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're few and far between the offers, but I do turn them down.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I find something inherently funny about having a book published by the AA.
I think you have to relate it to travel in some way by the looks of what they're saying here. And you've done a lot of travelling, haven't you?
I come here every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a good. The journey from your car, like a diary.
Could call my book every 2 weeks.
and up to St Helens.
Yeah, I
could travel about. You could do a little travel diary.
Could I?
Yeah.
And you must have done the years when you were doing Comedian on the Road.
Yeah,
when
but
you
I blocked it all out. It was horrible. I don't like travelling at all. I really hate it.
Really?
Yeah, I hate it.
Oh, no.
I hated driving around to gigs. I know that some people, and I imagine you're one of them, enjoys that travel thing.
Yeah, I would go out my way to drop people off. Like,
really?
Yeah, like I'd be coming back from Cheltenham and I'd go and take Coggers all the way back to Bristol and then come back.
Oh, bless him. I bought a two-seater.
So you didn't have to take anyone?
Like, actually. That was the actual reason. I got so sick of doing gigs and looking in my rearview mirror at 4 a.m. to see some fucker fast asleep.
Yeah.
I was like, do you know what? I'm going to genuinely buy a two-seater.
Or the other ones that were just chalk. Or I did a gig up in Birmingham once with Phil Davey and Adam Bloom. And just before we got in the car, Phil Davey turned to Adam Bloom and went, you can talk about anything you want, but not comedy. Alex Blue didn't say a word all the way up and all the way back. Adam,
that's a good way of approaching that, though, isn't it, with Bloom? I wish I'd thought of that.
He nearly exploded, though, with it. Like,
if Mitch Bang
I've got
gets
so many questions,
Mitch Bang gets in, you've got to say, my CD player isn't working. Fucking disconnect it before you get it. Andy.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Best of luck with the book, Hitch in Time. Available on, where's the best place, online? Is there a website
Foils.
For this?
Foils
is the best place. Yeah.
Just the Hitch in Time, Andy Smart.
Yeah. To go and grab the book, as you can hear, plenty of stories from Andy. He's probably told them all, actually, so that's probably makes the book a bit redundant now, really. But come on, support an old man in his final years. An old man who's still asking the question.
Who hasn't got the money to pay for his funeral yet.
Yeah. And we don't want another crowdfunder, do we? So, and trust me, comedy community, those crowdfunders are going to come thick and fast. Over the next few years. I don't think any of us begrudge Cogs. But let's make that the last one. And the rest of them, their family can pay for it with the money that they've accumulated within their careers.
Fuck it. This has been so dark.
It's gets darker. I'm going to play When Will I Be Famous. I'm going to go double play.
Mash up.
Before we get Aldo in. You doubted me, Nat.
I did. I want to hear this. I'm excited.
Turn this off. You doubted me.
Yeah.
Now, listen to this. I don't think I've heard this in over 20 years.
Okay.
And I remember thinking this was genuinely beautiful.
Okay. I'm excited. I didn't believe it
But I don't know if
until...
I still will.
Okay. We'll
you
see.
Ready? But do listen we'll to it. And shut that door.
With a little touch of gel, I read all the newspapers and now I read my mail. Oh boy, oh yeah, yeah, oh. I won't wish my life away. No one tells me if I gain, and I decide when I'm grown up and turned into a man. Drop the boy, drop the boy. I'm a man, yes I am, and they don't call me boy. Drop the boy, drop the boy. I'm a man, yes I am. And now I'm jumping for joy. Now the boy is dropped, yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Now the boy is dropped, yeah. the wedding. I've got another point of view. I'd like to be in politics, and no one tells me, oh, I know what to do. No more bikes or plastic models and races on my deed. I'm gonna drive a Dino and to live out of my reach. Drop the boy, drop the boy. I'm a man, yes I am, and they don't call me boy. Drop the boy, drop the boy. I'm a man, yes I am, and they don't call me boy. No. The boy is dropped. The boy is drowned. The boy is dropped. The boy is dropped. The boy is dropped. The boy is drowned. Drop the boy. Drop the boy. I'm a man. Yes, I am.
Told you.
Yep, that's a real
acoustic
song.
Version.
The boogie.
What did he say?
So that, this is the boogie.
Something about the boogie.
It's not really a boogie song. It was quite slow.
No.
Drop the boy. It was a boogie.
I still liked it a bit. I thought it was too long.
Yeah, it did feel. He hit a lot of notes there, which was good.
He does that. He's a singer now.
Yeah,
he's
it's
a
true.
Singer.
Well, not every singer can hit notes, can they?
That's true. We're joined now by Aldo Kane. So here's direct quote: TV adventurer.
Yep.
That's
true,
accurate.
Right? That's so far, yes,
talking about his BBC Two Horizon documentary, Britain's Next Air Disaster? Drones.
Dun, dun, dun.
So are we scaremongering today or not?
I'm not.
No, let's do it. Let's get people terrified. A lot of them are armed, you know.
Can be.
How often is that? How often is that a thing?
So the film is on iPlayer now is about the threat. Well, it's everything from consumer drones all the way through to automated weaponized swarming drones. So it's a full investigation into everything about drones and what the real threat is and should we care.
Here's my knowledge of drones, and I will concede at this point that you probably know more about them than me, right? But my knowledge of drones.
Yes.
From experience as well, by the way, from one that was bought for me as a present,
right,
and also one that was used in filmmaking during the Parapod movie shoot, is they don't stay up very long.
Well, everything's dictated on battery life, so that's the big, you know, we use them all the time. I should say the majority of people that use drones use them perfectly legally, normally, and there's no issues at all. We use them all the time for filming. Everything that we do, from being inside volcanoes to jungles to wherever they are. And the key thing that keeps them up is battery and battery life. So really, they're dictated by how long that battery can power the drone.
The maximum I got with the movie was, I think, 4.5 minutes.
What? No,
was the maximum it would stay in the air.
You must have got the weak batteries.
Well, no, I didn't get the batteries. It was somebody that did drone shooting. That was his job.
What batteries they take, AA?
Tripoli. No, yeah. It depends. It depends what they are. I mean, but generally they will stay up depending on what type you've got, what the payload is.
Right.
On there, they can be anything from a few minutes up to half an hour, 40 minutes. Really? It depends. Okay. Yeah. Really is. It depends that much.
It's there's a lot of rules about them. That's the other thing I found out making the film, is that quite how many places you weren't allowed to put them up.
Right.
And the permissions that you needed to do it, and you needed to own the land you were. You're going up from,
as there should be. I mean, it's a flying object, and it's controlled by the CAA in lots of respects, certainly if you're using them commercially. So to be able to share the same airspace as a commercial airliner pilot, then it should be, at some point you should have the relevant qualifications or experience to be able to share that airspace. And actually, from what I found out is, on the investigation, is that most people that use them are using them for amazing, not just photographs, but for delivering blood and medical care for search and rescue. So so the good side of it far outweighs the bad side of it. It's just, you know, the investigation goes down the road of, are we well enough defended against that type of drone attack, I guess.
Were the surprises for you in the documentary? Were the things that took you aback?
Because I suppose it comes down to that technology. If you look at what's inside a mobile phone now, that tech has been used inside drones, and one that we looked at in the film is that you can have a fully automated drone. It can take off in this room. You give it, you know, a direction and a bearing and where it needs to go to, and it will go there, and it doesn't matter what you put in front of it or around it or above it, it's a robot and it will get there.
Right.
It will fly over, round, under until it gets to its target. So that for me was, if you want to go down the sort of doom and gloom route, that definitely does have some it could be used for malicious
intent. Then it would persevere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just one. So I mean, if you want to go down the sort of horrible scaremongering, these drones are, a lot of them are designed to swarm as well. So it's not just having one; it's, you could have 100, 200. But I have to say, from my point of view, I've only ever seen them being used for good.
Right.
So yes, we do interrogate bits of sort of information in the film about how they've been used maliciously, but really, you know, I've only seen them being used for good.
I think I like the idea of robots in the sky.
Why?
Because it feels like the future. Do you know what I mean? It feels very science fiction-y. So I like the idea of
what are they doing in the
us
sky?
All having to get our own drone and then fight other drones. And
there's places where they're testing drones out that are rebroadcasting like signal for internet for mobile phones. So there's a huge amount of implications for them. Great, you know, very good sort of ideas that are being tested right at the minute for them. But as with everything, it's, you know, what can be used for good can be used for bad.
I heard, and I've got nothing to back this up, literally nothing to back this up. And in fact, there was a flat denial from the person who was supposed to have done it.
Okay.
But I was working at a TV studio once, film studio once, that were film. I don't know if I'm legally covered on this.
Well, let's not say who it was.
Well, it's
where
difficult because I think it's quite obvious if I tell you the story.
Okay.
Basically, there were drones overhead that were getting photos of the set because it was a much anticipated film. And I heard that the company that were making the film, which is a very big company, possibly the biggest one, were shooting down drones.
But that's
what I heard.
Well,
they were shooting down drones that were trying to take photos of, like, the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, I see. So it's the Harry Potter.
That's what I heard. But then I asked about it. They went, "Oh no, stupid! Of course
that
not."
That does sound ridiculous.
But enough people were saying, "No, they have done that."
It would obviously be denied, but surely I would be okay anyway. Don't take a picture of the film.
There's a lot. There's so much scaremongering and sort of hearsay and rumours about what actually happens with drones. Bear in mind, I'm not a drone expert. I am a drone pilot. I can fly them legally, commercially, and I've used them for the last 4 or 5 years on jobs all around the world. I'm not the leading expert on it, but there's a lot of hearsay that I've found out on this investigation that's sort of saying, well, you could shoot them down, you could do this, you could fire a net gun at it. And that's with any arms race you're having, as soon as one piece of tech is developed in the drone world, the counter drone world is already on that and having to, you know, they're potentially on the back foot, but they're now trying to develop that tech which can counter that technology. So wow.
I think that's what I find exciting, and I am being flippant about it because I'm aware that this could be disastrous and all. You know, I get all that, but the other giddy part of me is like, oh look. A net gun? Whoa!
But having a pizza delivered by an automated drone.
Don't Amazon do it? Isn't that, that's what you should be about Amazon.
It's all being tested.
Yeah, they can deliver with drones.
Everything's being tested like that now.
I mean, they can't fucking deliver with a van around my way. But
maybe with a drone.
It's a crisis. I'm getting with a drone.
Yeah, but there's that. But the shooting it down thing. I was a sniper in the Marines for 10 years.
You just say that very nonchalantly. Like, sorry, can we just go back a bit? Let's go back a bit. You were a sniper. Okay.
Yeah.
Never met a sniper before. Former sniper.
You wouldn't know, mate. You wouldn't know, mate.
But, and so we, as part of the thing, as part of the investigation, we say, well, can we shoot one down?
Right.
And obviously you can see it on iPlayer now. Yeah. But we spend quite a bit of time going through the process of getting lined up and... I'll let you watch it to see what happens, but it's not as easy as just firing a rifle or a gun at a drone.
I think they had laser guns.
Right. But I know I'm not good at shooting because I tried the clay pigeon thing.
It's not actually far from the truth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whoa.
They're not just selling them as toys.
Yes.
I'm thinking with all this as well, Nat, you need to be careful because if you go on one of your rampages around London that you sometimes do,
Nat,
you probably notice how massive
very,
Nat
very
is, right?
Tall.
Nat sometimes goes on the rampage around London like King Kong, right?
Yeah, but I would have a drone. I would grab that drone and smash it.
No, because they can swarm. He was saying they can swarm.
And
you'll climb the telecom tower.
I'd have to take down some landmarks. It means to protect myself.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I'll take all the drones.
You can bat some of them away.
Yeah.
But some of them eventually will make you lose your balance and you'll
fall.
That's
true. That is true.
So, so that's a good side
okay.
of the drone attacks.
Can I point out on your press release that things are just dropped in there like that, but I really want to ask about how come you were charged by a black rhino?
Casual. These are casual
things. These are casual things.
And
did you,
this is nothing we need to know. Did you have Ebola?
No.
So how did you escape it?
Well, then I escaped Ebola as well, then.
Yeah, I did too, then.
That depends on what's written down here.
It says you escaped Ebola. Like, were you running away from it?
I was. So your first question was about rhinos.
This is the bombarding bit of the interview.
I'm going in order, because there's a lot of fascinating
things
here.
So basically,
put him off guard, Nat. Put him off guard.
Bring in the drones. I run a company called Vertical Planet, and we... provide safety, security, technical stuff across the television and film industry from films to adventure television. And so that means, by default, I end up going to some of the most extreme, remote, hostile, austere places sort of on the planet. And that would involve teaching anti-poaching units on the ground in Africa how to better use their equipment and that's obviously Foxy and I both get charged by a
black rhino.
Yeah, exactly. Head down and run at you. So there's not much you can do. You kind of stand behind some twigs and hope it doesn't actually.
Don't have to punch it.
You were being a brilliant adventurer sentence.
until
you said you stood behind some twigs.
Yeah, until everything goes a bit wrong.
Oh
then,
my god!
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to.
I think I'd sidestep
rhino.
It. I'd sidestep it, mate.
That's basically what you have to
I'd
do.
Wait to the very last second.
Wait, do you think?
And sidestep it.
What if it gets too close? There's a lot of them where you're supposed to punch them, like a shark, punch it on the nose.
I don't think you can punch a rhino on the nose.
You're not? You can try, right?
You can.
Have a go. Now, why did
I don't think you'll make much. Let's stay with the rhino for a second.
For now, we'll stay with the rhino.
If you take any lessons from Spider-Man, which you probably should.
Yeah.
The rhino in Spider-Man. Whenever it's in a computer game, always what you do is you wait. You stand in front of something heavy, something big behind, and you wait till he's about to hit you. I think, not twigs. Don't stand behind twigs.
Not even branches, twigs.
And then you jump out of the way, and then, of course, he runs into that, gets dazed, and then you can go and twat it for a bit. But, there aren't any twigs involved.
No twigs.
I would sidestep a rhino. Put it on the record now.
I prefer not to be round one, really.
No,
to
same,
have to
but
take
if I ever find myself in that situation,
black rhino,
which I could.
Now, why did you abseil into an active volcano? An active one,
active.
Not any old one.
And when it was in there, when we were in there, it erupted while we were in there. Sounds more violent than it was. It's quite scary, but all in a controlled way. So we were filmed inside this volcano three times in the Congo, in the Virunga National Park. Beautiful. Biggest lava lake on Earth. I guess we've been in filming with the BBC, with Nat Geo. and that's why I was inside it. When we were inside it two times ago, it did actually erupt when we were inside it. There was a new vent opened up, and it basically flooded the entire bottom of the crater of the volcano, where I was just about to abseil down into it, so we had to postpone the trip down.
At that exact moment, what's your thought process there?
Fuck.
Yeah, is it properly that.
Like the normal response. Do you have any phobias at all? Spiders, I don't know, something?
Not. I don't have phobias, but I very definitely have to deal with fear fairly regularly.
Do you? Okay.
And it's perfectly natural. Yeah. It's an emotional response, and from what obviously...
It's a safety valve as well, isn't it?
I'm not a psychologist, but it's there for a reason to feel that fear is just, even if it's just to make you stop and think about what you're doing and to talk through the next process, the next 5 minutes, I think it's there to help you make a well-informed decision. And emotions, actually, most people say, oh, I banish emotions and, I deal with facts. And actually, your brain, I haven't worked out yet, but there's something in your brain, your amygdala short circuits the reasoning part of it, and it's that emotion that makes you move out the way of falling rocks. It's complicated, and I'm not very good at describing what it is, but I do deal with it quite a lot. And
but there must be, but is there, like, if you talk about sniper stuff and all that, there must be some element, I would have, I'd say you must be as if I know anything about it, but I would have thought there'd be some element of detachment for a job like that, where you have to just go, I can't think of this in what would be thought of as human terms.
Yeah, it's the same actually with, from whether it's being a sniper, and that training has helped me with everything else, dealing with narcos, or dealing with traffickers, or dealing with an environmental situation. Mm. Like you're in the middle of a rock fall, or you're up a mountain and a bad storm comes in. It's about that fear thing comes in initially, and that gives you the warning. It's like, something's not right here, you need to sort it out. Then the reasoning part of my brain then takes over, and I detach myself from that situation, and I can say, right, cool, these are the facts, this is what I know, and this is what I know that I can deal with.
Yeah.
And so therefore I'm controlling the controllables, I'm controlling the shit that I can control. Mm. Everything else out with that, then there's nothing that I can do about it, so don't worry about it.
What did they drink in the Congo? it's bothered me for years.
It's bothered me for years.
I want to know.
I'd be surprised. They make mbongo over here.
But was there any? Was there any sign of mbongo?
I never even heard of that song before I went to DRC for the first time. Mm-hmm.
Then everybody
sing it.
Yeah, that's what happened. Mbongo, drink it in the Congo.
I think they should sue them though. If they don't
no
drink
proof.
It in the Congo.
Well, maybe they did used to. And now I don't think mbongo still exists. To be fair, I think it does.
I suppose all you would need is for one person to go and have a drink of it there, and then you can say, well, they do, or two people.
Yeah, it's true.
Because you're saying they.
Fantastic place, like one of the most beautiful places on the planet, I think.
Are you heading towards calming down at any point, do you think?
I'm 41 now, and I joined the Royal Marines at the age of 16, so I did 10 years in the Marines, and then I've been doing this really since. And I think the more you do this type of work, the more it's not addictive per se, but it's very much like you have this adventure bug sort of rekindled every time you do something.
Right, okay.
It's difficult. I'm still doing it.
No, but I'd have thought you'd be like possibly around the age now where you would start going, I don't think I've rolled my dice.
Yeah,
I've done all right, and I quite like the idea of sitting at home for a bit. Like, do you know what I mean? But that's me relating it my own feelings.
I judge a trip by how many times I wish that I was sat at home, and I wish that that person. More often than not, I would. Is the other way around. I'm on the job wishing that I was at home, wishing I was that person that was chilled out and happy to just be at home.
So should the worst come to the worst, heaven forbid, but should the worst come to the worst at any point, what end would you choose, right? Would it be, like, being charged by a rhino or something, or a volcano engulfing you or whatever, or would you prefer to have a comedy death? Like a more funny sort of...
Well, you would definitely want death by misadventure on the certificate, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Or I would. I certainly wouldn't
I want death by falling asleep and not waking up.
I would definitely want that. But you can guarantee it would be something... horrifically mundane. I was out, spent 3 months in and out working with narcos and hitmen with my mate Foxy over in South America, and we'd almost got.
Was that Jason Fox?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's pre-grammar.
No,
the
show. Dr. Fox.
You say Foxy. You don't remember who Fox was, if I asked. Just Jason Fox. Remember who came in here, the big guy?
Yeah, I remember him.
No, you don't.
I liked him a lot. No, I really liked him. Yeah.
We had been filming 3 months in this quite fairly interesting, dangerous environment. And both of us nearly got taken out in a car crash on the last day where we almost got decapitated by a rolled up shutter. You know, on the front of shops, you get the shutters. That was on top of a Hilux. And Hilux was driving towards us, slammed on the brakes, and this thing came off the top like a javelin, came through the back window and nearly took our heads off.
Oh, wow. Fucking hell.
And we were just thinking, can you imagine back home?
The jokes.
We've been doing...
After a day of everyone being horrified, can you imagine how many jokes they could write about that?
No, after about 1 second. But, you know, like, we my job seriously is to mitigate as much and as many of the risks as possible in a specific environment, whether that's dealing with animals, with active volcanoes, with the environment, jungle, desert, mountains, or people. And you mitigate as much as you can on paper, then really most of this stuff is quite risky and quite challenging anyway. That's why we're doing it. And you just can't foresee every single eventuality, and you know, being decapitated by a flying roller shutter.
It's weird. I always find it weird when you come to the end of an interview and you find yourself as a host of a show going, I hope you don't die.
Well, what are you up to next? What are your next expedition?
We've with Steve Backshaw, we've just finished a big 10-part expedition series that's on Dave Channel, coming up on 21st of July, I think that starts. And that's basically 10 world firsts, all from Greenland to cave diving in Mexico to climbing big walls in Oman, canyons. It's pretty much, if you're into adventure.
I'm into watching it, not necessarily doing it.
You have your rampages. That is adventure, what you do.
Few and far between. Then I get a bit giddy and have to watch the TV for
that's
a bit.
It's Sunday night, good viewing. It's sort of an hour's worth of adventuring around the world doing world first. It's cool. So we've got that, and obviously we've just finished Drones, it's on. And then I think it's going to be a couple of months of R&R rest.
I think you should
catch up on your Sky Plus.
You should I really do. And then do your next adventure.
Well,
come and tell us about your next adventure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming in. Britain's Next Air Disaster Drones is on the iPlayer at the moment. It's the Horizon documentary. That Aldo Kane, thanks ever so much, man.
Thank you guys.
Basically, where you've been talking, I know I looked distracted. I was going through the playlist and literally Nat has filled it with Bananarama, and I don't know why.
I'm in a Bananarama.
I'm just scrolling down and down and down.
There's also Janet Jackson on there. There's some
Rufus and Chaka Khan.
There's Chaka Khan. There's a lot of things
putting
going
that
on.
One on. But nothing's happening.
It's a little slow start. It's a fade in. Here she comes.
Now imagine Aldo like upsailing into the volcano.
Yeah, perfect song.
That music. Not finished yet. Wait, I can still hear.
Jack's got his life.
Wait. Right. I can still hear.
She's done.
Right, she's finished.
She's finished.
We're joined now by Brody Snook in the studio. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
It was quite quick, that, wasn't it? You just sort of piled in, and then it happened
very quickly. Pleasantries, and now we get to know each other.
So I'm sorry.
Cool.
So do you want a minute?
No, that's okay.
We've got 20 minutes that we can chat for.
Mm.
So we can just take it at whatever pace you want to. It's been kind of a full-on show today.
Mm, that's all right. If you guys want to take a minute, that's fine by me. I just need to be out by three, that's all. But
okay.
Can chat
that's
shit.
Right,
when would your ideal out time be?
2 to 3.
Great,
good. That's good.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to aim right at 2 to 3.
That's cool.
Are you going to talk about any adventures that you've had?
If you need me to.
Well, just the previous
two
guests. I need
guests.
You to not.
Oh, yeah.
I've had nothing but adventures
nothing
in this.
Nothing but adventures
right.
today.
I had Andy Smart, who's done loads of
hitchhiking
stuff.
Well, we didn't know about him. I booked an actual adventurer who's like abseiled into a volcano, been chased by a rhino.
And you can't shut him up about it.
And yeah, he's done a lot of things.
Off air, just kept talking about it all the time.
He did.
Oh, I've abseiled into a volcano.
He's a comedian. Suddenly announced he'd run up Ben Nevis, the mountain, in an hour and a half. And it was really...
And he runs with the bulls, Andy.
Yeah, and he runs with bulls. Andy Smart.
Yeah. So
I do absolutely fuck all.
Great, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Welcome to the show.
No adventures for me.
So we're talking about your show, which is called Handful, which is the Gilded Bloom Wee Room.
Mm-hmm.
But the new Wee Room, that is, that's not the same as the old Wee Room.
Okay.
Because I don't think the Gilded Bloom still have the Wee Room. The
have
original
you performed
Wee
at the Wee Room?
I did my
you
first did. Edinburgh at the Wee Room.
Oh, okay, right.
The old Wee Room, which was on Grassmarket, down that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the old Gilded Bloom was that burned down.
Oh, okay.
It was across the road from there, in like this little youth hostely place. Tiny little, obviously.
Yes.
Tiny little room.
The Wee Room.
But it's now at Tevia, isn't it? It's over at Tevia.
It is, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And have you been there before?
I have, yes, yeah. Apparently it's a really good room to debut in. They've had a bunch of people that have debuted in that room.
Okay.
At Night debuted there a couple of years ago, and yeah. I've heard it's a hot box, but it's a really good room to debut
in. They
are,
though,
so.
Aren't they? But I'm all for the Gilded Balloon. Mm. Like, I really am. I did my first three fringes of the Gilded Balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... And I like Karen, who runs it. A lot of people don't. But I like her.
I think Katie's quite in charge, from what I hear, as of recently. So
never... As long as... Karen draws as long as breath. Karen's around. Yeah. Don't be fooled by what it says on the paper.
That's so true.
She could literally come in and just throw you out of a window and say, right, oh, book someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
She wouldn't do that.
No, she's got like scary auntie vibes, but you respect her, don't you?
She's soft as anything.
Yeah.
Like she wouldn't thank me for saying that, but she genuinely is. I remember the first time I met Karen Corrin, who owns the Gilded Balloon. She does have a kind of a which she orchestrates herself, quite kind of a fierce demeanour and quite formidable demeanour.
Mm. Yeah.
But it doesn't take much flirting before she is just an auntie. Like I call her Auntie Karen.
Flirting to make her an auntie.
Yeah, but not. No, but I don't mean serious flirting. I mean like literally childish flirting.
Oh, fine, yeah.
And she will go, oh, you know, you will get an R out of Karen before too long.
That sort of vibe.
Don't know if it's that or whether it's the complete opposite.
Oh, I see.
Where you literally just call her out to her face and she'll kind of respect that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Strong people do though, don't they?
Sometimes. Yeah. I don't.
You don't call people out?
I knock someone out. No. Somebody called me out to my face.
My ego's way too fragile for something like that.
Are you a fragile ego performer?
I think I can be. I think as the years go on, I get better with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it really depends on the nature of whatever the thing is. I suppose if it's something coming from your peers or people you admire, if that was sort of something that was thrown at you, that would probably crush your ego a little bit. But it depends who it comes from, where it comes from.
I get that. Yeah. I do totally get that. I think there's a point that I don't know whether it's to be aspired to or not, which is I'm just going, oh, fuck them. Like, do you know what I mean? Even if you previously admired someone and then they're a dick to you, then
exactly,
it's
exactly
like,
yeah, there's something about letting that go, isn't
yeah
it? It's quite freeing.
Yeah,
not that I've had too many of those in comedy, but yeah.
Well, I think there are less than you'd perhaps think, but they do exist and they come from the strangest of places.
Oh, mate,
sometimes
yeah, so don't they just
yeah, have you got, you can tell
she's
us more.
She's had an adventure.
I'm trying to think
adventure number one.
I'll put a song on, we'll just say
maybe we need to go to the pub for a chat like that.
No, but it's a weird thing though, that, isn't it? And it is I think it can be underestimated that just quite how, if you're, I guess most comedians starting out, how long have you been going as a comic?
5 years this year.
Okay, yeah. So that's a fair chunk of time, really.
It's funny because whenever I get asked that, I don't know where to measure it from, because I suppose the first 18 months I did like maybe one gig a month, didn't really know what I was doing, did the same five for nearly 2 years, and then kind of went, oh fuck, like why am I wasting my time with this and not taking it seriously? So yeah, I suppose if you were to measure it from when I started taking it seriously, that's probably 3 years ago.
Okay.
And doing things like going, oh, maybe one day I want to do Edinburgh, and maybe I want to actually try and make some money from this, and maybe I don't want to recite the same five that is utter rubbish at the same open mics every night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Massive self-deprecation.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Is it really? Is that your act on stage as well?
Sort of, yeah. I find I've had some really interesting, or not even interesting,
some shit gigs that I've done.
I've had, quite a few bits of feedback from some of my previews that have been like, oh, it's a bit savage, you know, sort of. I've had the words man-hatey thrown around, which is always really nice to hear as a female comic, which just basically meant it didn't keep my attention, and I'm disappointed in you for that.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's an easy shot on that, though,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah. But I think it's very important to sort of not always be the butt of the joke, but to obviously be turning things back on yourself as much as you're, you know, hanging shit on other people.
I always struggle and always have struggled with comedians winning their stories. That's the do you know what I mean? When they're,
of course,
when they're the hero of their own story,
yeah,
it always sits slightly uncomfortably with me.
Exactly. Fucking book a TED talk, mate. No one cares.
No, it's true though, isn't it? And it's a surprising. And there's some comics that do really well with that as well. But when you actually break it down, you're like, oh, you're just actually showing off.
Yeah, it's, you know the term, I mean? Humble brag. It's humble bragging for an hour.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, well done you.
But then again, isn't stand-up showing off like the epitome of showing off, really?
I suppose it is, yeah, by being on stage. But not all of the stories involve them being a hero at the
being
end, which
a
is
legend,
quite nice.
Yes,
being a legend.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
I think so. I think that's important. I think there's a big thing with Edinburgh shows as well. I've gone up to Edinburgh as a punter, and you know, the last 4 or 5 years as well, because I'm a big comedy fan, and there is a huge thing about the journey and the, you know, and I was such a better person at the end of it, and all that sort of stuff. And I kind of think, narratively it can work and it can be a really nice full circle and stuff, but I think I've found myself in my own show kind of going down a bit of a falsified type ending, and then kind of going, ugh, what, like, why am I trying to do that, you know, can I not just acknowledge that I'm still the dick I was in the first 20 minutes of the story, you know?
But it's weird when those trends emerge as a comic. I think when you spot those trends emerging within shows, like, I was always very against that idea, even though I was quite, and I remain quite interested in the different stuff that I do now, of talking about a journey and talking about self, you know, assessment, I guess, and just how you're looking at yourself. But I was always very, I think, aware of falling into a niche trap. So I remember the last Edinburgh, the Here Comes Trouble show that I did, which ended with my dad being very ill, and I actually paused before that story and said, he's not dead. He doesn't die in the... It's going to sound like he's going to die in the story, and he doesn't die, which I didn't need to put in there.
You didn't. You could have done the false pretense thing and then be like, he's fine, by the way.
But there were a lot of people doing dead dad shows, and it felt like sort of... that I had to say that as a kind of a knowing reference to what... to the trend that was being followed. And I also didn't kind of want to cheapen my dad's illness. Toying and going, is he going to...
With, you know, sort of like I have a... if you sort of call in for work or call in sick for work or do something like that, I always kind of go, oh, is karma going to come back and bite me? And the next time I've got something really important on, am I going to, you know, get a migraine or fall down the stairs or something like that? So I find, like, I've got a weird kind of conscience thing as well with lying too hard. It's like, obviously, we embellish the truth and we, you know, put some sugar on it and stuff. But, yeah, I think, oh, fuck, if I make up that, you know, something awful's happened, will that thing
something
happen?
But conscience and karma are two different things.
That's
so
true,
if conscience is inspired by karma, which, let's be honest, doesn't exist, isn't a real thing, but, you know, some people believe it, some people
don't.
Some
bumper stickers would really disagree with that.
Well, shit happens, doesn't it?
Also a good bumper sticker.
So how are you... feeling about this then? So, but is it still a big deal, Edinburgh? Is it still for a newish comic?
Sure. Well, it's my debut this year. You know, I've felt like I've played the long game with it. I know a lot of comics sort of do, you know, 2 years of stand up and then go, I'm going to go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And you think, holy fuck, that's a bad
idea.
And
then they die.
And you may as well just set fire to 12 grand in your backyard. Yeah. But so I'm really excited. I'm sort of equal parts excited and nervous and terrified and all the normal things. Biggest thing I will have ever done, and yeah, I just have put loads and loads of work into it, and hopefully it pays off and I don't have too much of a meltdown.
I think meltdowns can be helpful sometimes.
That's true.
Creatively, but only if they're manageable meltdowns.
If they're pivotal moment meltdowns where you go, oh, this is what I need to learn from this meltdown.
And I don't know anyone but the absolute psychopaths of the comedy community, of which we could all learn, who haven't had who haven't had a meltdown at Edinburgh.
Who kind of just go through as if nothing touches them, and you sort of think, wow.
Yeah.
On one hand, you're like, I'd love to be like that, and then you go, oh, you're broken.
Well, also, you look at the people who go, I wouldn't fucking trust you with 10 pence at down the club. I literally wouldn't trust you as well. If you can be that sort of dead-eyed ambitious.
There's so much of that in comedy as well. It's quite hard to find a real nice person.
But then I also struggle to find them funny. I can really do. If I see someone... So I was talking about this on Patreon the other day. Like, genuinely... I don't think it's been out yet. I mean, it would have been out when this comes out.
Yeah.
About the how many things have been ruined for me by working in the comedy industry, for the amount of time that I worked in the comedy industry and for working in TV stuff and behind the scenes on TV stuff. And I think I was saying something about, like, if I could tell you these stories and you stood in solidarity with me...
Yeah.
I would ruin so many things for you. So many comics would be ruined for you because I'd tell you the truth about them. And I'm sure there's people that would say the same about me who would say, oh, no, I'll tell you what he's really like. I'm sure that is true, but...
Oh, yeah, so much of that in green rooms.
It's terrifying, isn't it? Why would you want to enter into all that?
Oh, la, 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 that person was my hero.
Who can we destroy? Who can I ruin for Brody?
Because there have been people that have been difficult to some people, but then someone else will go, oh, no, I'm really great with them. I still think it's worth meeting the person in case.
You and I were talking off air earlier on about someone, about a comedian who is no longer around, and our different experiences of that person. And I said to you, no, that person was a lovely person. However, they had their demons, and you were subjected to their demons in a working environment.
Yeah.
So, you know, that person was two different people. Right.
I narrowed that down to three people in my head. I'm trying to guess.
I don't even think it's And Nat's shaking her head at me. I'll tell you off her.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you off her.
I honestly don't think it's an issue because I think that's readily acknowledged about
I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying not. Well, I'll do some research in the meantime and then we'll go over it on the live show.
If it's who I think it might be, I've heard both sides of the coin as well, but sort of definitely more side of the coin than the other side.
I love this as radio. Will you write it down on the back of it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, please.
Just write down their initials.
Yeah.
Have you got cameras in here?
But if you put their initials, it'd be all right. So have a look. Yeah, bang on.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, I wish this was a quiz. Yeah. Absolutely nailed that.
But it's probably rubbish for the audience. Well, that might be the listening audience.
Some audience have figured it out too.
Well, they'll be trying to look at it as well. I just saw you had a quote from Will Anderson.
Yeah, oh gosh, that's quite an old quote. I sort of never really use that quote in the UK because Will doesn't have a massive audience
I know Will, and the reason I know, that's full circle that is now. Because
is it? Yeah.
When I did the Wii Room, so this would be 99.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Will was doing, I believe, his first Edinburgh. It might have been his only one. I don't know if he ever went back.
I don't think he has, no.
Okay, well, me and Will, I don't know that he'd even remember me. Mm. But we used to fly her together. So he would fly her for his show and I would fly her for my show in the same place. There was three of us in my show, so we would break it up in that. But I hung out with Will. And Miranda as well was flying Miranda for her
Hart.
Show,
yep.
Miranda Hart. And I really liked Will. But I found him a deviant little so-and-so. Like, he was really... Well, he used to wear... I don't know if he still does. He used to wear nail varnish.
Oh, he used to. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And I used to go, why are you wearing nail... What's that a thing for you? Yeah. Why are you wearing nail varnish? And he said, because when I'm flying, girls will go, oh, I like your nail varnish, and you get chatting. And I was like, so what? So you can pull women with it? And he was like, oh, no, just get them to come
like
to the show.
It
wasn't as sinister as that.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, oh, God, you devious fucker. Yeah, you would even think about that.
It's a talking point, I suppose.
I liked him. Yeah. Lot. Yeah. I really liked
him. He's a great dude. He's a real champion of young comics coming through.
Okay.
And he's the biggest, if not one of the biggest Aussie comics, and a real staple in our
mantle.
Yeah.
I keep struggling to sell tickets when I knew him.
Yeah.
Oh, not anymore. He's underdog.
He's had a 20 odd year career now in Australia. So yeah, he's as prolific as ever for us, really. So yeah, but that's quite I love to use for the Australian festivals and stuff because everyone goes, oh, Will.
Well, he says unpredictable beats, incredibly funny about you. And did you know that Ardal O'Hanlon said that you are lovely? Imagine it's just that.
Lovely.
I would cut off the rest of that quote and just have lovely.
Lovely,
smart, understated stuff from a future star.
Aren't you on tour with him?
I was. You were.
Oh, that's cheating then.
So that's cheating.
I made him say that in the car when he was tired.
It doesn't actually say it's about you.
That's true.
So you could have just said it just in general.
In passing, yeah.
It does say on the other page what people have said, to be fair. Because Brighton Source, they spoke about you too.
They did. The very, very well-known publication of Brighton Source.
Wow, Brighton Source, really, did they?
Brighton Source.
I'm surprised you could get them to come and see you.
You should try and stop them, honestly. It's crazy.
They said three words.
What did Brighton Source say?
What have they said
about
me?
Dark. Engaging.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Good one, Brighton. Mm-hmm. Good.
Well, they're good quotes.
Look, no one knows who the fuck I am yet, and this is...
Oh, listen to that. Did you hear the ambition? Did you hear the yet?
No, it's good.
She showed her true colours.
Yeah, that's good. That's
you know
good, Brighton.
This is the whole point of doing goddamn Edinburgh. May it go well.
Yeah, and may you always consider it goddamn Edinburgh.
Do you have a three-word quote for Brody for the next press release?
Mm-hmm.
Three words?
Yes, like Brighton Source did.
Out by three. I'm going to go with out
Take
by
that
three.
With you. Take that with you.
Running for a train.
With our blessing.
Oh, I love that.
I'm sort of semi excited for you and also semi dreading it for you. It's
I'm both of those.
But that's good,
well.
I think, isn't it?
You've got to be honest about this. It's going to be a really hard, long month, and who knows what's going to happen.
Well, you just do what you do on the stage. I think that's the secret of Edinburgh.
I'm all right at just sort of doing the tunnel vision. Worrying about what's happening either side of me. I think provided I am well behaved, and the show gets a bit of hype around it and some nice audiences and stuff, it should go off without much of a hitch, I guess.
I hope so. And are you taking yourself up there? Or are you with... Is it
my management are taking me up there. So Mick Perrin Worldwide.
Okay, that's good hands, isn't it?
Lovely team. And obviously they have been doing Edinburgh for years and years and have some really fantastic acts that they do. And So yeah, I'm with a really good team of very experienced people who answer my really dumb emails. So yeah, honestly, I ask the stupidest shit. It's crazy.
Do I need to pack a coat?
Do I need a passport?
Are you based in the UK?
I am, yeah.
So you're based in the UK?
Yeah, down
now,
in Brighton, fair enough, where my fan base is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, do you work for that publication?
It's my blog, all right?
Is that your day job?
Leave me alone.
Well, I wish you well.
Thank you.
The show is called Handful. It's at the Wee Room over at TV. It's from the 31st of July to the 26th of August. You're on a day off?
Not the 13th.
Not the 13th. On
she
the 13th,
disgusting.
I will not be speaking a word
disgraceful.
To anyone.
Disgraceful. I now don't approve of it.
Look, it's very lazy, isn't it?
It's an hour a day. It's Brody Snook, Handful. Thanks ever so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I've got you out at... Wait. 3 minutes to.
Oh, so legendary.
Pretty exceptional radio presenting from me there. Even if I do say so myself. Thank you to Andy Smarts. Thank you to Arlo Kane and, of course, Brody. And we shall see you again next week. Although last week I will be having a real go at Nat about missing my birthday, but you'll have already heard that last week.
Yeah.
See ya. Are you still there?
This will be a little trick to see who actually listens throughout all of this.
If you listen right to the end of it.
Yeah, then you'll notice.
Hey, I've just... It's kind of my fault. It's kind of Nat's fault.
It's both of our fault.
Well, what happened was, I was looking at the wrong clock.
You were.
I was looking at the clock in real life.
Yeah.
In fact, I've just kicked Brody out.
I know, really early.
Thinking that
to
it's...
be fair, though, she did actually need to leave by 3 p.m. in real time.
Oh no, that's right. Yeah,
so
okay,
she
that's
did
fine.
Have to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, so that is
go.
Fine. That is fine.
We're on 1:54 now.
Yeah,
I think
so
they might have been a bit on the beginning as well of silence.
No, we started pretty
straight
much straight
in.
Away.
Okay.
Yeah, because what happened was we started chatting in the studio.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, we don't need to record yet," and we chatted for a bit longer. And then when you started the recording. We started
in.
Pretty much straight
okay,
away.
Okay, so that's good. So we're
but
on,
we've just seen that we've come in like...
We've got 5 minutes left.
Yeah, like ages early.
Yes.
So we've got to just fill some
why
time.
Why don't we
now,
do
we?
Another tease about what happened on last week's show?
Why don't we... Why don't we do a tease about what happened
about,
on
oh,
last week's
I'm gonna
show?
I'm going to bollock Natalie for doing this, but then you said it on this show, as
yeah.
in like you already heard it. But maybe we'll do some more teasing. That doesn't
but
make
you
sense,
you can't
does it?
Tease for a show that's already happened.
That is true. That
let's
is
throw
true.
Forward to next week's show.
Well,
what guests have
we
got coming up?
Currently...
Not the ones that are on last week's show.
No, actually, I think we've got a porn actress coming in.
Oh, yeah, who's that?
Whose name is Sophie Anderson, who's fabulous.
Sophie...
Anderson.
Anderson, okay.
So she is great.
What am I going to speak to her about?
She's got her new TV show and song, which Theo knows the name of, and I can't remember what it's called.
Okay.
Shout it in Ian's ear, please, what it's called. Oh, he's there. Driving for Dick.
Driving for
That's
Dick.
That's it, Driving for Dick, yeah?
Right.
So she's got her track out, Driving for Dick. I hope she can do the show. We haven't had full confirmation yet, but it's looking good for her.
So promotes her song, Driving for Dick. Go on.
You know, but she can get a book from AA as well if she's been driving around.
Yeah, go on.
So...
Who else? Come on.
That is it so far, I believe.
Right,
That's it
no,
so
that,
far.
That feels urgent.
Let me... Oh, no, we've booked her. That's why we booked her on for the next show, because we want her in, because we like her a lot. And I'm trying to open up my Google Doc. I think that's the only guest confirmed so far.
How far ahead do you book guests for this show?
Normally further ahead than this, but...
Who sits in an office, books a porn star who's got a song out called Driver for Dick and goes, do you know what, that'll do for today.
Oh, no. She came in a while ago and we were like, I actually do want to
Oh, so you've met her before?
Yeah, so that's what I mean. She was so great. So I was like, I do definitely want her on this show. It'll be funny. She'll be great.
Why?
Because she's just funny.
All right.
And we'll play her track. Maybe she said she might have the remix up by that. She's going to do an acoustic version, a dance version.
Yeah.
She's great.
I think you can sometimes overproduce these things, can't you?
Well, I don't know. You need a
remix.
The
title is probably enough.
Driving
just
for
do
Dick.
That. Don't even have to be a real record.
You're assuming that Dick means penis. Could mean Richard.
It means penis.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does in this thing. But
okay, so have you got any irons in the fire, Nat?
Any irons in the...
Have you ever been in a studio ever before where both the presenter and the producer are just looking at a screen? And just watching time slip away.
Three more minutes. What we get? Three more minutes.
Well, no, we don't need the full 3 minutes because this is where 57 is where I would come out of the
right,
show.
Right,
anyway.
How long's left on this song?
Let's have a look. 2:13.
It's not quite enough, is it?
Still just. Well, I should just do it.
I'll just start it again. We know what's happening.
Right.
Here.
So I've had my practice ending. You've had that. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks
to Andy Smart and to Aldo and Brody, of course.
Yeah.
For all your brilliant stories.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nat.
Thank you, Ian.
This is a producer's job, this, by the way.
What?
You should have checked to make sure it wasn't the time. Not come round this side of the desk, started getting handsy and then gone, oh God, no, we've come out early.
That's how we traditionally end the show.
That is actually true. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week with whatever guests we have.
Let's be some other
fingers
ones.
Crossed for Driving for Dick.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.